Welcome to Bull Market Thinking. I'm your host, Tekoa Da Silva. With us here on the line is returning guest Rick Rule, chairman of Sprott U.S. Holdings, part of the $10 billion Sprott Asset Management Group of companies. Rick, getting right into it, we had the complete wipeout in gold yesterday, down about $70 an ounce, along with the mining companies, natural resources, being absolutely smashed throughout the day. So I'd like to ask, what are you seeing and hearing here from an asset management standpoint?
Well, this is interesting. You'll recall in a couple of prior interviews that you and I did, I said that bear markets ended in capitulation selling and that I hadn't seen that yet. We are now in capitulation. This is the fourth time in my career I've seen capitulation selling. And it gets ugly and spasmodic, but this is the beginning of the end. Certainly, I believe the precious metals themselves as bullion are oversold and we might be due for a technical rebound. It could sell off again. That's not uncommon, a double bottom. I think if we do get a rebound in the precious metals prices, that it will not, in the near term, pull over to the equities. I think we're going to get washout selling this summer, absolute capitulation selling. And then you're going to have a sideways tail in the equities. As both the buyers and sellers are exhausted, the market will certainly bifurcate. The better names will do better, but they'll only do marginally better. It won't feel good. But we are setting up the type of recovery that we saw in 2002, the type of recovery that we saw in 1994, the type of recovery that we saw in 1986. You know, I mean, this is the way markets work. It's bear markets like this that cause bull markets, and the inverse reaction is really a function of the strength of the action. The depth and severity of this down market cycle, the fact that maybe 700 juniors will go away, as an example, over the next 12 months, set the stage for a truly spectacular recovery. I know next time next question you're going to ask me, when is that going to occur? And I'll duck that question because I don't know. But what I do know is that bear markets cause bull markets and bull markets cause bear markets.
Yeah. So, Rick, when we talk about that inverse reaction that you're expecting back to the upside, in that inverse reaction, would you expect it to see the doubles, triples, quadruples, and maybe across the entire space?
Absolutely. I mean, without fail. I can't tell you what's going to happen. But I will tell you that what we're going through right now is exactly what we've needed. From a pricing point of view, the resource market has been undervalued for a year. My nervousness about coming back into it with both feet was simply that we needed a downside blowout. We needed capitulation. We're in capitulation now. Last week, I was on the East Coast of the United States visiting very large institutional investors, and the level of indecision I saw was absolutely classic of the period right before capitulation. And this week, right on schedule, we're getting it. Truly ugly, but it's the kind of cleansing that the market needs.
Mm-hmm. Rick, if I can also ask you about gold here, were you closely watching it during the mid-70s when there was that similar type of shakeup?
I sure was. And by the way, that shakeout was much more aggressive than this one. That was a 50% decline over 9 months. And as ugly as it was on the bullion, it was uglier yet on the equities. I would suspect that the equities markets in the 1975-1976 cyclical decline was more like a 65% decline over 9 months. It was truly, truly, truly brutal. And that set the stage for an unbelievable recovery. And that's worth discussing because passed often is prologue. In the decade as a whole, the gold price went from $35 an ounce to $850 an ounce. In the period 1970 to 1975, gold advanced sixfold from $35 an ounce to $200 an ounce. And suddenly, over 9 months, gave up $100 from $200 to $100. Investors who didn't have either the cash or the courage, or better yet, both, to survive a 50% cyclical decline in a secular bull market, those who got shaken out at the bottom missed a move in gold from $100 to $850, an eightfold move over 6 short years. And the move in the equities was even greater. And that's a really, really, really instructive lesson.
Mm-hmm. Rick, when we're at this stage, how much of this here now is about courage as compared to people getting hit with forced liquidation and or redemptions and just simply not being able to hold on?
I think it's some of both. You know, the truth is that many people don't have the courage of their convictions, which is why those people often, you know, go into mutual funds. But the truth is, it's your decision as to whether you redeem. It's your decision as to whether you add more capital in bad markets as opposed to adding more capital in good markets. So the truth is, it's both. What I have found in my own life is that one of the functions of courage is cash. When I have more cash, I have more courage. And I've disciplined myself in my life in periods like 2009, 2010, when I felt smart, to maybe do a little more selling than other people. And I have always scaled back into markets. Even as we speak, I'm conflicted. I realize that what you do at capitulation bottoms is buy. But rather than buy in a broad basis, what I'm trying to do is save lots and lots and lots of cash to participate in private placements, which will give me both shares and warrants, because I want a leveraged participation to the upside. And getting a warrant in a private placement is getting the opportunity but not the obligation to double up on your position at a fixed price over a fixed period of time. You get to participate in success, be it market success or corporate success, retroactively, and you get to do that for free. So it's interesting that even in this time of capitulation where cheap stocks are getting ridiculously cheap, even I am keeping lots and lots and lots of powder dry because I believe that I will be able to provide capital when nobody else will be willing to provide capital to an industry and get warrants.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rick, if I can also ask you here, are there certain types of projects in the metal space that you expect might go the way of the dodo bird, whether it be the big bulk tonnage, low-grade deposits, those?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay to buy those large low-grade deposits if you get them very, very cheaply. You can make an absolute fortune doing that, like we did with Silver Standard, like we did with Lumina, like we did with Allied Nevada. If you have an 8 or 10 year horizon, many of your listeners won't have an 8 or 10 year horizon. There is nearer term money to be made two different ways. One is in the sort of 18 to 24 month time frame with regards to the undervalued pre-feasibility or feasibility stage development projects. The other is in the context of companies which have made discoveries that have decent grade and nobody cares. You're in a market right now where you don't have to buy these stocks in anticipation of the market's reaction to news. You can wait until the good news comes out, study the news, and then make your decision, because we're back in a period like 2000 where good news comes out and the stocks go down. This is the best of all possible circumstances if somebody has a 2-year time horizon or a 3-year time horizon. And it's actually a spectacular set of circumstances if you have a 7 to 10-year time horizon. This is a lethal set of circumstances if you have a 3-month time horizon.
Yeah. Hey, Rick, some people, they'll say, oh, this is terrible, we're getting killed. But yet some other guys, they say, we're just getting up every day and we're going to work. How does this time impact the guys, the Ross Beatties, the Bob Quartermains? What do you see those guys doing during these periods?
All these guys are working hard. Working hard. Ross Beatty is out looking for opportunity. Lucas Lundin is looking for opportunity. Bob Quartermain is completely ignoring the market. He's proceeding with his bulk sample, dealing with the First Nations, lining up his financing. He just got a long-term investor the other day, Liberty Mutual Insurance Group, who have built a couple billion-dollar oil and gas business, you know, on the private equity side. This is the time when the A players go to war.
Yeah. Rick, now when you look back on your career, in terms of returns coming out of these periods over a longer time frame, I guess what's sort of the light at the end of the tunnel for people to stay focused on during these times?
Well, you know, in the 1998 to 2000 time frame, those first two partnerships I did, the 1998 partnership and the 2000 partnership, the capital that we allocated at market bottoms, over 5 or 6 or 7 years, those partnerships generated sort of 20-to-1 returns. Doesn't mean I'll be able to do it again. I manage more money now than I managed then. But certainly, small, focused investors who are willing to allocate capital now and have a 2, 3, 5 year time frame can expect spectacular returns if they do the work. I was talking with Eric this morning on the phone, and what he sort of reinforced to me was that he built Sprott from a $10 million manager to a $10 billion manager by the aggressive deployment of capital at times like these. Eric has always said, don't be afraid to be right. So that's where we are.
All right. Well, Rick Rule, chairman of Sprott U.S. Holdings, part of the $10 billion Sprott group of companies, thank you so much for sharing your comments with us again.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.